I'm Indy Todd. Welcome to The Point. The high-profile police-related deaths of unarmed black men in the U.S. sparked protest and widened a rift between communities of color and the police. The Cape and Islands is not immune to these issues. There are many living here who fear the police because of the color of their skin. There are others who fear police might uncover their immigration status, and some who struggle with addiction or mental illness and make them fearful of police. Today, we discuss efforts to improve relations and open dialogue between the community and police. In a few minutes, we'll discuss community policing with members of the police force, a religious leader, and faculty at Cape Cod Community College's criminal justice program. But first, we discuss the theory of broken windows policing, developed by social scientist and professor Dr. George Kelling, along with James Wilson. The theory is based on the premise that when public order is maintained, crime is prevented. Dr. George Kelling joins us on the phone. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Sure. Now, you and James Wilson developed this broken windows theory in the early 1980s when we were experiencing record high crime rates in many urban areas. Can you elaborate on the broken windows theory and give us some background on its development?
Well, it developed, at least my portion of broken windows, my contribution, developed first of all out of a foot patrol study that I conducted in Newark, New Jersey. And there I found if officers maintained order, fear of crime went down, although crime didn't necessarily go down. The other source for me was spending time in primarily high-crime minority area neighborhoods. And there was another concern about police that you didn't mention when you mentioned when you listed them above, and that was for police to ignore what was going on in minority communities and not provide the kind of protection that they'd provide in other communities. And so the demand, my impression was that the demand for order in minority communities was very high. It was in minority communities primarily where the problems of disorder were threatening the community and maybe leading to more serious crime. So that was the background. And the idea was that if you don't take care of some of the minor problems, it sends out a message to the community and sends out a message to predators that nobody cares. Mm. If nobody cares, they can move in and operate with, feel free to operate. And so we developed the broken windows theory, and that was that take care of some of the small things and a lot of the bigger things can be prevented. I would just add one other thing. Broken windows theory, as many times, has not been well represented by broken windows policing. Hmm. And that is broken windows policing oftentimes has degraded into a high arrest program. Broken windows, as Jim and I originally conceived of it, and I have written many times since, was never oriented around a high number of arrests. The whole idea was to prevent crime, warning people, educating people, maintaining order, and in other ways, reducing fear of crime, and strengthening neighborhoods and communities. Mm. And I would just add, from the very beginning, Jim and I saw this as a contribution to community policing, not as antithetical or outside of community policing. Mm.
So what can you tell us about research into the effectiveness of broken windows policing?
Well, most of the research has looked at the relationship between broken windows policing and does it have an impact on crime. And for a long time, the research was really both one ways. You could find studies that supported the idea that if you took care of disorderly problems, crime declined. You could find other studies where they didn't. However, there were two major experiments done in the last decade, one in Lowell, Massachusetts, the other in Jersey City, New Jersey, which were formal experiments, the gold standards of research. And in both cases, they found that when order was restored to a community, crime declined. Now, the work in Lowell is especially interesting because it combines with what's called situational crime prevention, and that is, although crime was reduced across the board, in those areas where they dealt with community problems and tried to settle community problems, rather than just focusing on typical law enforcement or arrest kind of approaches, those were most successful in reducing crime. I think the burden has switched. For those who want to argue that broken windows doesn't have an impact on more serious crime. The burden is on their side now, given these two experiments.
You mentioned that broken windows was meant to be an accompaniment to other things. So what are some of the other tools officers can use besides arrest to create public order?
Well, it seems to me warning, for example. And if you go, if you walk or ride with police officers, you find out there's a lot of warnings. Hey, you know you're not supposed to do this. Knock it off. Move on. So there's warning. There's also education. People make mistakes. You can educate people. You can not only warn individuals, you can warn an entire community. For example, I was asked in the late 1980s to help deal with the problem of disorder in New York City subway. Once we decided to move aggressively to restore order, we spent 2 weeks with advertisements, TV shows, on the radio, announcing to people that we were no longer going to tolerate fair beating and other forms of disorder. We were trying to get people to stop. We didn't want to arrest people. We wanted them to desist their behavior. And for those who continue the challenge, of course, you likely will have to arrest. But most people backed away and decided that these are the rules of the subway and we're going to abide by them. So it's warning, education, referral, all those kinds of things that police do on a regular basis, but don't get recognized as much as arrests, because arrests can be counted, warnings can't.
Right. Some argue that broken windows policing ushered in the more aggressive police tactic of stop and frisk, and that strategy started a breakdown in relations between public and police because it suggested racial profiling. How do you respond to that?
Well, it could have, and that's why I earlier made the point I differentiate certain broken windows theory with some broken windows practices. I used to get very nervous back in the 1980s when broken windows was first catching on, and all of a sudden the chief someplace would say, "I just read broken windows, and tomorrow we're going to start broken windows policing." And my response to that was, "Oh my." We need more training. We need a lot of training. We need guidelines for officers. How do they use their discretion? What variables can they use to decide whether to arrest or not arrest? After years of ignoring disorderly behavior, you just suddenly one day don't say to a police force, "Now go out and practice broken windows theory." It's much more complicated than that, because the level of discretion of officers is very high. When my wife and I wrote Fixing Broken Windows, I knew at that point we would run into the kinds of issues that we have run into. And I published a monograph for the National Institute of Justice on broken windows and police discretion, arguing that we had to have transparency in terms of the development of guidelines. Who do we decide to arrest and not arrest? Who do we decide to, may we use race as a factor in this? Obviously not. But what factors can we use to determine who gets arrested for public urination and who gets warned? Those are critical issues that police didn't pay enough attention to. And in New York City, I think after Bratton left, the push came to drive crime down lower and lower and lower. It was a preoccupation with terrorism, and people started to use stop, question, and frisk very, very aggressively, unnecessarily aggressively in my mind. But one can say, yeah, in respects, the misuse of broken windows could have contributed to the development of too aggressive stop, question, and frisk.
So should the work of police be directly linked to reductions in crime rates, or are there other ways we should be assessing the value of police work?
I think there are a lot of ways that we ought to be assessing policing that we're not assessing policing, and that is that policing is a very interesting occupation in that the process of how things are done trumps what their outcome is. You have to do it legally. You have to do it constitutionally. So we have to find measurements of doing it properly and doing it correctly. The reduction of community fear is important, a sense of public security. How do we measure that? Do we use surveys? Do we use focus groups? But crime is one measure, but we can get too concerned about crime at the cost of using methods that are inappropriate or might alienate a community. And we have many examples of that. New York City, prior to the return of Bratton, was an example of the overuse of stop, question, and frisk, and arrest. And the evidence since is you can reduce the number of stops enormously, you can reduce the number of arrests enormously, and crime can still decline.
We're talking with Dr. George Kelling, one of the architects of the broken windows theory of policing. Joining us in studio now, Chief Mark Polina of the Chatham Police Department. Welcome, Chief. Good to see you.
Good morning. Thank you.
And Darren Stocker, Associate Professor of Cape Cod Community College in the Criminal Justice Department. Welcome to you, Darren.
Well, thanks for having me.
And also on the phone, we welcome Reverend Pancetta Peterson, a retired community minister and member of the Martin Luther King Action Committee. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
I'm going to start with you. The Martin Luther King Action Committee, in partnership with the Criminal Justice Department at Four Seas and local police departments, has planned a community forum on community policing that's taking place later this month. What was the impetus for the forum from both a community and personal perspective?
Well, the impetus really was all the shootings of the young black men nationwide. And because of some incidents that have happened on the Cape that have not led to shootings, we thought that since it was possible for those shootings to happen here, maybe now would be a good time before any incidents of that kind to start to have a community involvement with the police. And so we started work on it. And here we are.
Chief Polina, the Chatham Police Department is also hosting a community forum, a discussion series on policing and race relations. That forum takes place tomorrow evening. What were some of the reasons for bringing together that forum?
Well, I think some of the reasons are just what was mentioned. We have some issues and incidents out there that I think the public feels very concerned about. And my feeling is we should be out in front of these things. And when it's a concern to the community, it should always be a concern to the police. So we decided to take some of the incidents that are happening out there and let's talk about them. I don't want to have a police department that puts a deaf ear onto concerns by the community.
Hmm. Do you feel like since we've had some of these shootings nationally, there's been, you know, you've heard more from the folks in your town that this is a concern of theirs? Are they worried that something like this might happen here? Are they worried about racial profiling?
Yeah, I haven't heard specific concerns from individual persons in the community, but more of just a general concern by folks saying, hey, you know, these things are going on around the country. How are we doing here? Are we training properly? So a few questions, concerns, and that was part of the impetus to put a program, a discussion together about this.
And I imagine you're talking to other police chiefs around the Cape, right? I know you meet regularly and kind of talk about issues that are going on. And is everybody sort of on the same page here and feeling the same way?
Yeah, I think any police chief of any community right now needs to be aware and out in front of these issues, because you can't stick your head in the sand and just hope they go away. It's not going to go away. That's why we have to talk about it and get it out in the open.
Right. And if there are any other police chiefs who want to chime in, we'd love to hear from you this morning. 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We're going to talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We are talking about community policing. On the phone, Dr. George Kelling, one of the architects of the broken windows theory of policing. In studio, Chief Mark Polina of the Chatham Police Department. Darren Stocker, Associate Professor of Cape Cod Community College in the Criminal Justice Department. And on the phone, Reverend Pancetta Peterson, a retired community minister and member of the Martin Luther King Action Committee. Darren, race relations and policing has become a hot button topic. So how do you address race and interactions between people of color and law enforcement in your criminal justice curriculum?
Well, I think the issue has been here for quite a long time, and I think now it's a good idea to open up these discussions, where a lot of times those discussions were somewhat quelled. And so we appreciate the students and what they have to say and allow them to voice their own experiences within a classroom environment, it's a good idea that we share each other's experiences, because I think we learn from each other's experiences.
Yeah. Do you think having a more diverse police force, or a police force that reflects the face of the community, could help in race relations? I'm going to ask that of all of you.
I'm going to defer to the chief right now.
Good.
Yeah, I think that anytime you have a more diverse police force, it's to the benefit of the community, because you're representing all pockets of the community. But I will say it's extremely difficult to get a diverse police force.
That was going to be my next question, right?
It's not like you just go out and get a diverse police force. There's a lot of different standards and that sort of thing, and quite frankly, a lot of folks who are well educated and have gone on to successful careers don't necessarily want to go into policing. Mm-hmm. It's especially lately we've seen applications down, very much down across the country, for people wanting to come into law enforcement because of, I think, quite honestly, all the issues and all the attention to the controversies that have occurred around the country.
It's always been a tough job, and now we're seeing just how tough it can be. You want to say something, Terry?
Yeah, I actually do. Every year, the Cape Cod Community College Criminal Justice Department has an advisory board meeting, and we bring in the chiefs from all over the Cape. And this past year, we brought up three different things that were challenging for local law enforcement. Number one, the opioid crisis, which is one of the things we're going to address. Number two, homelessness, which is another issue we're going to address. And number three, hiring police officers and having them stay on the Cape. Interesting enough that when we spoke about law enforcement and the challenges on the Cape, the one thing that wasn't brought up was crime.
Interesting. Yeah. All right, Dr. Keller, what do you think about that? A diverse police force sounds like a great idea, but in an area like there's not a whole lot of diversity here on the Cape, so how do we address that?
I've watched the department struggle with that since the 1970s, and that is not only that, once you hire, you find minorities and get them operating in a high level, they tend to be stolen by other agencies. I know when I worked in Dallas in the 70s, they went out of their way to find minority, especially African Americans, and they sooner no longer had them trained and the FBI stole them. But I'd like to go back to the chief's comment about meetings with the community. It seems to me that if you consider American policing, we have 18,000 police departments. What do we have, 700,000 police officers? Every day you're going to have some failures. And that is, an officer is going to be tired and make a mistake. An officer is going to be racist and shoot somebody. Something is going to happen. That's almost inevitable when you have those numbers, that there are going to be failures. And at that point, when a failure hits a department, that department better have a strong relationship with the community, have work with the community, have credibility with the community, in a sense have money in the bank. Because if they don't, they're in for a whole lot of trouble. And some of the scenes that we've seen in Ferguson and other places like that. So I congratulate the chief on anticipating this and having the meetings and setting up the networks so that he has a touch. And hopefully he will be fortunate and won't have a failure. But there are going to be failures every day in the United States, and those departments had better have a close working relationship with neighborhoods and communities, and a diverse police department. Sure helps under those circumstances.
Yeah. Let's bring in Reverend Pancetta Peterson.
Yes. I also think that just as the schools have had a difficulty in hiring women teachers of color, expecting that one person invited to join a force on the Cape just tells you that there's going to be a loneliness gap. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a sense of, oh, my gosh, I'm the only one here. What are my supports? So that I think that the reach has to be very broad, and the effort has to be made to hire more than one person or two people on the Cape. But apart from that, some of the incidents that have happened here that could have led to a police shooting. One happened in Wellfleet here we were a little bit involved with it. I think that for the most part, the police don't really bother those of us who live here. But the rudeness with which this incident occurred, I mean, we have to find another way. We have to find a way to respect the people that the police are going to encounter.
Mm-hmm.
One incident I had, which was not on the Cape, I went to ask a question of a police. I saw a police car, and I came out with a map going toward him. And he yelled at me, you know, carried on as if I were endangering his life. I guess that whole fear of that person was leading. Mm. And then he came to my car and examined it as if I were carrying drugs. I mean, we cannot presume that because somebody is dark-skinned, that person is a criminal. We have to stop that.
Yeah.
Now, I understand that everybody's fearing for their lives. Come on. I was in a car with a friend the other night who was stopped with a car because apparently one of her lights was out. And that police was so nice and encouraging. I thought, I was left with, oh, my. I wonder if that's how I would have been treated.
Yeah, that's a good question. All right, I'll put you on the spot again, Chief.
Yeah, no, there's one aspect or concept in the world out there called customer service.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't usually associate customer service with policing. But I know certainly here in Chatham, what we try to do is really push this idea of customer service. And again, it's not always associated with policing, but that concept is so important. How you treat people, the level of service you give people, it has to be professional. It has to you have to be approachable as a police officer, and you have to have this idea of customer service. It really is so important. I mean, how many times have we been on the phone with, not to pick on an insurance company, but say an insurance company, and you know, you just can't get your issue resolved. And so having this idea of customer service, being a problem-solving organization as opposed to just a law enforcement organization is it's a different approach. It's a different way. But that's what we're pushing where we are here in Chatham with the Chatham Police Department.
Okay. Let's talk to Sarah, who's giving us a call from Wellfleet. Good morning, Sarah. Nope, Sarah's gone. All right. 866-999-4626 if you want to call back, Sarah, or anybody else. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Chief Koch and Brewster writes, I applaud the work of the MLK Action Committee. Many meetings over the last 2 years have allowed honest discussions about policing and race without judgments. Respect and dignity go a long way. We have more to do, but forums like today and upcoming forums will move us in the right direction. And I'm just thinking, as we're talking about this, and Pancetta was talking about the two experiences being pulled over. When you get pulled over by a police officer, it makes you really nervous. I mean, you know, most people are a little bit nervous. Like, what did I do? What's wrong? You know, and that can create a little bit of fear. And we've all had those experiences where there's some officer who's been very nice. We resolve what it is and we move on. And others who you go, what is this guy's problem? I can't say anything right. What is there anything in the training or anything that do you have conversations with your officers about? I mean, everybody has a bad day and, you know, maybe you hit them on a bad day. But what goes into those conversations of this, you know, as you're saying, customer relations?
Yeah, well, I think it's a matter of how much you emphasize it. And if you don't emphasize it and you don't say it, it's not important. And if you want it to be important, you have to emphasize it. You have to say it over and over. And that includes the training as well. And we have done in-service training where we brought people in just for specifically customer service, professionalism, and how to achieve those things in everyday encounters with citizens.
Yeah. I'm going to bring Dr. George Kelly back in, because I'm wondering what you're seeing in your work with police departments around the country. Do you find that there's enough training in this kind of how to interact, depending whether it's a traffic stop or something more serious? And what are you finding?
No, there's not enough training in that area, especially there's not enough training about discretion. I've gone over training programs in states where the word discretion was never mentioned. And so, But there's a whole movement now coming up, primarily out of Yale University, called procedural justice. And that is, it's a focus on the impact of treating people fairly, treating people respectfully. And if you want to change the attitude of the community towards police, you begin on a person-to-person contact, and that is to treat people respectfully, fairly, listen to them, guide them. And even if you're forced to make an arrest, you can still do that in a civil, procedurally appropriate way. And so there's a lot of thinking about this, and departments are picking up on this. But unfortunately, a good share of curriculum of police departments is determined by state boards, which emphasizes training in shooting, training in driving, training in other areas, without enough emphasis on the interpersonal aspects of policing. So I think a lot of work has to be done to rethink what the real basic content of policing, police training ought to be.
Mm. All right, let's talk to Pete, who's calling us from North Chatham. Hi, Pete. Pete, are you there?
Unique.
Yep, go ahead.
Oh, good morning. Good morning, everyone. Yeah, I live down in Chatham, and I would just like to echo what the chief had mentioned about customer service, because in the past, I've had nothing but positive and very relative interactions for various reasons and occasions that the police are actually really there to look out for you. And as a matter of fact, there's been for a time I've wanted to go and meet with him to thank him personally for his staff and his the way that the everything goes down here. So I just did. When he had mentioned, customer service, you don't really generally hear that from police departments. And I understand that, you know, throughout the country there are areas where these incidents have occurred and that the police are under the scrutiny of brutality. I've actually never seen that.
Yeah.
Because in my experience, the officers that I've dealt with go out of their way to de-escalate and create an environment and a relationship that is totally positive,
right,
and on our side.
Pete, you bring up a really good point. Thanks for the call. You just mentioned the officers go out of their way to de-escalate the situation. And I was thinking, as we're talking about this, this seems to make so much more sense. And I don't know why more police departments don't do that, because it keeps everybody safer. If you've got a respectful situation, even if it ends in an arrest, you're de-escalating, where if you're acting in another manner, you're escalating the situation, right?
Yeah, Mindy, that's a great point. And to Dr. Kelling's point earlier, the police training really has never emphasized all that much the idea of de-escalation until recently, with all these incidents we've had around the country. So it's starting to become more and more important, but it's funny because I looked around and I said, okay, where do I get de-escalation training? And it's not, you don't call up the de-escalation training company because it doesn't exist.
All right, but, Darren, is that something you're doing?
No, it is something we do talk about in the classroom, but one of the things that I think is really important to understand is most people actually don't have interactions with the police. They have very little interaction with the police. So when they need a police officer to respond to a complaint or they see themselves as a victim, they want that interaction to be as positive as possible. And law enforcement, and the Reverend brought up something that I think is absolutely on point, and that is the fact that the reason we're having this forum is to look at some of the issues that are occurring and to make sure that we don't have those issues here on the Cape, and also to celebrate the collaboration that you see in front of you. And that's the collaboration with the MLK Action Team, the citizens, law enforcement, the the community college itself, and we're able to bring all those things together in a very positive way. Mm-hmm. And this is a great way to show that the collaboration does exist here on the Cape.
Let's talk about some of the issues that are happening. The Trump administration has pledged to crack down on undocumented immigrants and demanded state and local officials assist Immigration Customs Enforcement, or ICE, in their work. Many undocumented immigrants, including those here on the Cape and Islands, are concerned about reporting crimes or cooperating with police for fear of deportation. Chief, what's your department's policy when it comes to immigrants with documentation? This is a kind of a tricky subject because generally police departments aren't necessarily trained in immigration law and all of that. So how do you deal with that? And it's a real fear.
Yeah, it's of course, as much as possible, I try to stay out of the politics. But that being said, it's actually pretty simple. There are no local state laws regarding immigration that we can enforce as a police department. So we don't. It's really that simple. Immigration is a federal law. It's comes under federal guidelines and federal enforcement. So we, quite frankly, just don't really get involved in it. Now, if it's a matter of a safety issue to our community, or a state crime or a local crime, then that's something different. Mm-hmm. Then obviously we're going to protect our community, and it's all about public safety. But we don't get into the federal aspects of immigration.
Darren, there are those who view that the law is the law, whether it's federal, state, or local law. So how can criminal justice programs help future police officers navigate that complexity of protecting and serving the public along with upholding the law?
Boy, again, that's another one of those challenges that just exists within our society. To keep in mind that the United States is the only country in the world that has a representative living on its soil from every other country in the world. And what those people who immigrate to this nation do is they bring with them their experiences. And some of those experiences have been very challenging, especially with the law enforcement that they've seen in their own countries. So it's a great idea to educate our students in understanding that those challenges did exist, and that those challenges don't have to exist here. And as long as we continue to break down barriers, and I think we've made tremendous progress with that, break down those barriers, then I think eventually most of this problem will be solved. At least I hope so. Yeah. I do see that in the future.
Riley is giving us a call from Chatham. Good morning, Riley. Riley, are you there?
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
I wanted to call to say two things. I had a quite, when I returned from overseas in the military in 2005, I was pulled over in Chatham right on the rotary. The two officers came with hands on their pistols on both sides of the vehicle. Didn't allow me to get my registration, kept me out. I was wearing a camouflage, but I had a very negative experience. But listening to everything today has left me with a sense that a lot is being done, a lot has changed, and makes me feel really glad that other veterans are, as a white male, mm-hmm. That left me with a bad taste in my mouth, and I probably have a lot of privilege, so it makes me really happy that this is happening in my community.
Yeah. Bradley, thanks for calling. Thanks for sharing that. Because not every experience is going to be good. As we said, as Dr. Kelling was saying, there's bad days. Some officers are trained better than others. And sorry you had a bad experience, Bradley, but it seems like it's something you're addressing, Chief.
Yeah. It's the idea of, respectful to all citizens. And if you're respectful to all citizens and you have this idea of customer service, and the other important aspect we didn't mention too much, but having a problem-solving approach in a police department is something I think is really important as well, because Dr. Kelly mentioned procedural justice, and basically in a nutshell, it's doing the right thing, not necessarily doing what you're legally permitted to do, but just doing the right thing by the community or by the citizen. And I think that has to be the focus going forward.
Okay. We're talking about community policing. We'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We are talking about community policing. On the phone, Dr. George Kelling, one of the architects of the broken windows theory of policing. Also on the phone, Reverend Pancetta Peterson, a retired community minister and member of the Martin Luther King Action Committee. In studio, Chief Mark Paulina of the Chatham Police Department and Darren Stocker, associate professor, Cape Cod Community College in the Criminal Justice Department. 866-999-4626 is our number if you'd like to join the conversation. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Let's go to Devin, who's calling from Edgartown. Good morning, Devin.
Good morning. How are you?
Great.
Thank you very much for the show today.
Sure.
It's a very important topic. I think there have been really good examples of community policing that we've seen, you know, like up in, for example, up in Boston at the protests following Charlottesville. I think that was an excellent example. Wondered if you're guests could talk a little bit about some of the good examples they've seen from the past months of community policing.
And let's talk with Dr. George Kelling, since you've got your eye kind of on police departments across the country. What have you seen that's been positive of late?
Are you asking me?
Yes, I am.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, I think there's been an overall commitment to the development of community policing. And that is, you can find critics of police, except for really way out critics, but they agree that they want a model towards of community policing. And I think there's agreement at that among both critics and the police themselves that they have to move towards a community model of policing. And that is a focus on the prevention of crime by persuading people, by being present in neighborhoods, by collaborating with citizens groups, and by using the best research available. And so I think policing is moving very, very quickly. And I think police also deserve a credit, because if you think about it, all of the major developments in terms of community models of policing developed at the local level of police departments. It wasn't state police. It wasn't federal police. It was local police departments that developed the ideas of community policing and have moved swiftly in that particular direction. Mm-hmm. And even community prosecution and community courts really learned from police about community models. So I think there's been a very, very positive move. The other thing is, I would just say, you know, I broke into policing during the 1960s. That was a long time ago. Policing is light years away from where it was in the 1960s. Mm-hmm. It was arbitrary. It was police disliked everybody. The world was divided into cops and I won't use the vulgar term, and others, and the only good ones were cops. But now police really are identifying as part of the community and moving in that direction. Mm-hmm. There are still some obstacles, but I think people are working on how to deal with those obstacles towards a full model of community policing.
Mm-hmm. Reverend Pancetta Peterson, do you want to chime in?
Yes, actually, as we've been talking, I've been thinking of my dream. You know, my dream is that the police as humans, dealing with other humans, have a bond already. We're often with a family. We're often interested in peace. We can all learn about what this thing about justice is, what this battle about justice is. But more than that, we can begin to see each other as human, fully human. That is my dream. So simple. But that is what I dream about. I don't want to have to continue being worried about my three grown sons.
Yeah.
And the grandchildren. Mm. Because from what I have been seeing, all my children are at risk.
Yeah. I want to ask about that because, you know, when we look at the news, we don't always hear about the good things that some of the police departments are doing. You know, in the news, we just hear, you know, the negative, if you will, very rarely. I mean, I shouldn't say never, but rarely are we focusing on some of the good, which gives people this kind of skewed perspective of what's happening in the world. I think, Darren, you said earlier, most are good people. So are most of us in society.
Exactly.
That's a tough thing for you to overcome, Chief, when people have this perspective of police that isn't necessarily what's happening.
Yeah, it's, you know, when you put it in perspective, you, just a small town like we have in Chatham, and we have about 30,000 total calls a year or encounters of some kind, and the vast majority of them, 99.9% of them, go really well. Mm-hmm. But most people aren't focused on that.
Yeah,
it's the 0.1%. But just in terms of positiveness, one area we've really, I think, started to turn around is the idea of mental health issues and how we respond to those. And that's where a lot of the de-escalation techniques have really come in and helped. And I just wanted to mention that as a real positive area where police departments are improving.
Yeah, that was sort of what I had on the next question was how, you know, the challenges of dealing with mental illness and, you know, from the police perspective, and that's a tough thing sometimes to de-escalate. And also sometimes we have the issues in the homeless population where there may be addiction and some mental illness going on. And I know certainly in Barnstable they have at least one, maybe there's a couple officers specifically assigned to that beat to kind of interact and know who these folks are.
Yes, and even with homelessness and even with addiction, a lot of the underlying issues are actually, in fact, mental health issues. And so when you look at that, and years ago, and I'm not talking all that long ago, there was zero training for police officers encountering individuals with mental health issues. And that's one of the positive areas where that's really changing and really progressing well. So we need to keep strong on that and keep educating.
What about the mental health of officers? You'd think about, I mean, maybe not as much in China, but especially in some of the cities, some of the things that officers witness, you know, car accidents, death, you know, it's not all that many, you know, homicides here, but I mean, there's a lot of emotion and I guess the same is true for firefighters. How do we deal with the mental health of, you know, keeping them, you know, not getting too cynical?
Yeah, it's a good point. It's a good question. First responders in general encounter a lot of negative, awful things that they see in the community. You know, even if it's, you know, whether it's crime, criminal acts or victims of one kind or another, or even just car accidents or that sort of thing. So it's important that we, you know, bolster up our EAP units, that's Employee Assistance Programs, make sure we have those in place, which we do. And the other thing that's become very important is peer groups, where police officers have peer groups that really dig into that sort of issue. And we have to make sure we're healthy, and we have to be healthy and strong and positive if we're going to have a positive impact on our community.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk to Janet, who's giving us a call from West Tisbury. Hi, Janet.
Hi. I have kind of an odd question. I was wondering, thinking about these issues, to what degree does the way a police officer respond to a situation, given their family upbringing and the way they were treated as children in terms of discipline or coarse language, body stance, does that ever play into this sort of behavior on policemen? Mm-hmm. Are they made aware of that?
Right.
It absolutely does. Part of the training in the police academy addresses those issues. It's the perception that the public has simply based on the presence of a police officer, their uniform, the badge, the gun. That's the whole part of it that the public has this perception of. And then are police officers taking a defensive stance? Or are they more engaging? Or are they more relaxed? You know, when you're in the company of someone that's relaxed, you're more likely to become relaxed as well. Mm-hmm. When that person is seen as taking a defensive stance, then that's going to be portrayed and illustrated on yourself as well.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about the opioid addiction, which is, of course, happening nationwide. While possession of narcotics is a crime, we know treating drug addicts as criminals doesn't solve the problem. So what do we have happening there as far as training and what we're doing? Because this issue is huge.
Yeah, it just certainly is a big issue on the Cape and all across the country. We know that heroin deaths have surpassed car accident deaths. So becoming a very big issue, or has been a big issue. So we really have to treat that as an illness, and I think that's been the big turnaround. I think years back in my career, it was, someone had drugs, it's an arrest, and that's the end of the story. We have a great, if I might give a little plug to Gosnold here mm-hmm. on the Cape, we have a great relationship with them where the outreach workers for Gosnold have paired up with police departments and all across the Cape and have done a great job of where we come across an individual, and of course the police are always the first ones usually to come across individuals who may be addicted or have an opioid problem, and we're able to bring some folks in from Gosnold to do some intervention and try to get them into some treatment. And I think that's been a key change in policing, at least during my time in mm-hmm. policing, and a very positive change.
Yeah, just have a couple minutes left, and Dr. Kelling, I want to bring you back in and just for some closing thoughts here. It sounds like you're optimistic that we are moving in the right direction.
Oh, yes, I think so. I think, I think there are problems that we have to deal with, and let me just mention one, and that is the problem of militarization of police. And police are in a bind because you need highly trained, well-disciplined, semi-military officers to deal with the problems such as Las Vegas that we saw, active shooters. At the same time, trying to keep such units active in a police department is difficult because, fortunately, they're rarely called on. But that creates a problem in keeping them current, keeping them up to date, keeping them able to work skillfully together in a group. And so that's a problem that we have to deal with. But I think we are more and more starting to figure out these are the kinds of issues that we have to deal with. These are the kinds of thinking that have to go into it. And perhaps these are ways to resolve it. But I think we have to worry a little bit about the push towards these more sexy kinds of activities with AK-47s mm-hmm. and black uniforms and stuff like that we saw bandied about in Ferguson, and understand that we have a need for such units, but at the same time, they can't dominate the culture of police departments. I think community policing is going to win in this by a long shot because of the demands from the community. But I think we still have to be alert to some of these problems of dealing with problems that police are confronted with.
All right, Reverend Pancetta Peterson, just less than a minute. What are your thoughts? Go ahead.
Well, I'm looking forward to the forum. I have to tell you that, because the planning team has included just about every group we could think of on the Cape. So I'm looking forward to the good conversation. I'm looking forward to even some new ideas. Mm. And more than that, I'm looking to see us come out of it as a team.
Right. We say two upcoming forums on community policing. The first is tomorrow evening, October 18th, in Chatham from 5 to 6:30 p.m. And the Capewide Forum on Community Policing featuring Dr. George Kelling is Saturday, October 28th, at the Tilden Center for the Arts at Cape Cod Community College. We'll have details about both events at our website, capeandislands.org. Dr. George Kelling, Chief Mark Polina, Darren Stocker, and Reverend Pancetta Peterson, thank you all for being here. I appreciate your efforts. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Indy Todd. Thank you for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.